You want answers?
I want the truth!
Then you want Dave Hodges!
The Common Sense Show. You can't dodge the Hodge.
Good Sunday evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Common Sense Show. Hi, this is your host, Dave Hodges, and I'm coming to you from the rural desert, several miles outside of Phoenix, Arizona, where we have water issues, and that will be our topic for this evening. I think next to breath and breathing, there is nothing more important than water. And for the next 2 hours, we have two guests, Robert Glennon from the University of Arizona Law School, and in the second hour, we'll be joined by Mark Circus from Brazil, and we'll be talking about water issues, and we're soon going to be facing very, very serious water issues. Helping me to conduct this interview this evening will be Annie DeRiso, our news director. So let's go live to Nashville, Tennessee, and welcome Annie to the Common Sense Show. Hi, Annie. How are you?
Hi, everybody. Stay tuned. It's going to be a fast show, I guarantee you.
Well, it's going to be stocked with a lot of information that people are going to need. Just a quick note here, Annie, as an aside, you know, last week I raised the question whether or not the Tucson assassin, with that horrible, horrible event that happened last Saturday in Tucson, if Lofner was indeed schizophrenic. And, you know, it's difficult, and I can tell you any mental health professional, including myself, will tell you it's difficult to do a third-party analysis, but I watched the 60 Minutes accounts, and if the hearsay of his friends is accurate, he's clearly schizophrenic, suffering from paranoid delusions, paranoid schizophrenia, as well as nihilistic delusions, which is a subset of schizophrenia. It's a sick man. And I don't think talk shows had a lot to do with motivating this assassin to commit these horrible acts, but we'll see as this unfolds, the terrible tragedy in Tucson. Anyway, Annie, our topic tonight, as you know, is water. And here where I live in the rural desert outside of Phoenix, Arizona, I need lots and lots of water, and I need access to it quickly, or I would not be living here. And we're going to be facing severe water shortages in the next decade. There is water purification issues, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that we're going to be facing. Anyway, our first guest, as I mentioned, is from the University of Arizona, Morris K. Udall Law School of Public Policy in the Rogers College of Law. He's the author of several books, Unquenchable, America's Water Crisis and What to Do About It, which was published in April of 2009 by Island Press. His previous books include the highly acclaimed Water Follies, Groundwater Pumping, and The Fate of America's Fresh Waters, which was published in 2002. So without further ado, let's go down the road for me to Tucson and welcome Robert Glennon to the Common Sense Show. Hi, Robert. How are you?
Hi, Dave. I'm doing okay. Not great. You know, this is Tucson, and this is where the attacks occurred last week, and we're all pretty much still in a state of shock. And I heard your setup piece there about what a sick guy he is, and I have no doubt about that. But I do want to add one cautionary note. As sick as he may be, he didn't shoot the next-door neighbor or his boss or his spouse or someone else. He chose to go after a member of Congress. And unless you think that there's no connection between what he thinks about the public discourse and what he did, you know, why did he choose her? It's hard to say.
Well, let me, well, I think you didn't bring me on. Disrespected by her, but we'll be debating this topic for a long time, hopefully after Gabby Giffords is back serving in Congress.
Well, I hope so. You know, I mean, her recovery, God willing, is still going to be a very long process. But that's not why you had me on the show, Dave, so it's great.
No, it's great. No, it isn't, but I know the mood here is somber. I'm also a college basketball coach, and we played a team out of Tucson yesterday, and I had a chance to speak to some of the people. And well, I know how tragic those events were and how much the city is suffering. And we're already up against our first break, so when we come back, we'll get right back into the topic that I brought you on to talk about, which is water. Stay tuned, everybody.
Tomorrow,
Don't answer it.
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information, 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasermedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
The Berkeylight's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeylight, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeylight is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeylight, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Robert Glennon, the author of Unquenchable, America's Water Crisis and What to Do About It, is joining us here this evening on the Common Sense Show. Also helping me to conduct the interview is our news director, Andy DiRiso. And Robert, just out of curiosity, what got you interested in our water problems?
Well, that's a good question, Dave. I grew up in the East, and then I lived in the Midwest for a while, and I moved out here to Arizona in the mid-80s. And shortly after that, started getting into water laws and academic discipline, and gosh, I've never looked back. It was kind of a mid-career choice, and I just think it's an incredibly fascinating subject. It's so important. So much is happening, and I'm passionate about the issue of water.
Well, as I began to do research on the water issues last fall, I kept running across your name, and in particular, I came across it with bottled water, and I found that disturbing because I'm not so sure that our water supplies are going to continue uninterrupted or without problems. So I've stockpiled a fair amount of bottled water. But after hearing what you've had to say and read what you've written, I'm not so sure that was a good idea.
Well, Dave, it was an expensive idea, that's for certain. you're right. I was the first to blow the whistle on bottled water in my book, Water Follies, in 2002. So that was 8 years ago. And you know, the problems with bottled water are multiple. One is, with very, very, very few exceptions, it's not as good as tap water. It's not regulated under the Safe Drinking Water Act, so you almost have to be lucky to get it to be better. Plus, it's so expensive. It's 1,000 times more expensive than bottle than tap water. And a statistic I think you and your audience might like. In the first quarter of 2010, the U.S. Congress spent $190,000 on bottled water. Another problem with bottled water is it takes a lot of oil to make the bottles and a lot of water to make the bottles and then a lot of water to put in the bottles because many bottled water companies use some sort of a reverse osmosis system, a kind of a desalting system.
Mm-hmm.
And when you use that system, it takes a lot of water to get the water that's left over, like 3 or 4 gallons for each gallon of bottled water that you end up with. And then a final problem, I guess, in the mainstream account is that most of these bottles aren't recycled. And so there are pollution problems, ocean discard problems, and a general kind of waste of things. The thing that first got me interested in bottled water was the idea of how tapping into spring water can affect our streams and our precious rivers. And Nestle, the big Swiss-based food company, is the largest bottler of water in the United States, though most of your listeners wouldn't recognize Nestle as a bottled water company. But Nestle has, I think, about 14 or 15 different brands of bottled water, anywhere from Arrowhead in the east to Zephyr Hills in the south to Poland Springs and Calistoga and others. And these are all bottled waters that are produced by Nestle. And Nestle has a marketing strategy that says we American consumers will pay more if it's labeled spring water as opposed to artesian water, filtered water, groundwater, or some other FDA-approved label. But here's the kick, Dave. In order to sell spring water, you have to have the water pumped from a well that's right next to a spring. But hydrologically, if you do that, then what you're really doing is you're taking water that would have emerged from the spring. There is no free lunch. So, for example, in Wisconsin, where I first blew the whistle, Nestle wanted to put in a well within a very small number of feet from the spring, 50 or 60 feet, and pump 500 or 600 gallons of water every minute of every day of the year. Well, that would have just hammered the spring, and the spring was going to flow into this blue ribbon trout stream, and the cold water from the spring was critical to trout reproduction. So that's the sort of hidden subtext of bottled water, is the way that it can hammer the environment.
Well, and plus, you know, not to mention where they end up in the landfills, and I suppose they're not biodegradable.
No, they certainly are not.
And so you've got that problem. But let's go to the cost for a moment. How much more do we pay for bottled water than we do for equivalent tap water?
About 1,000 times.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, just about 1,000 times.
I did not make one of my better deals.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate for the bottled water side for a moment. Because what was your choice? What were you going to do with this? If you were saying, I'm going to drink water from the tap, or I'm going to have bottled water, well, that was sort of stupid, unless you have some very substantial reason to think that your tap water is problematic. But in some instances, people are drinking bottled water instead of Coke or Gatorade or other beverages that come in a can or a bottle. So then the financial trade-off, as well as the environmental trade-off, is really much more nuanced, because you have to ask, well, you know, aluminum is more expensive to make, but it's more easily recyclable, and so on and so forth.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, if it's a folly for me to store bottled water, then how would you recommend someone who's trying to plan for that lack of a rainy day, how should they go about storing water, or can they?
Well, I don't think there's anything even paranoid if you wanted to have a 5 or 10 gallon drum of water in your garage or something like that, something like that, because there are you know, if the electrical system goes down and there's no way to get water, you want something to tide you over. You know, 10 years ago now on the Millennium business, there was a lot of concern that when the clock hit 2000 that everything was going to shut down, and so there was a big rush to have food and water stored up because I don't know what, nothing of course happened, but I don't see anything wrong with people who are thinking about hurricanes or other things having some bottled water someplace.
Okay.
And Robert, what do you put in the water to keep it stable?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know that you need to put anything into Nanny because when it comes from your municipal water supplier, there's already chlorine in it. And that's because water is treated at some point before it's put into the system. But because the system is lots of pipes and the pipes can have leaks or can have contaminants, they add a certain measure of chlorine with a kind of shelf life that's pretty limited so that it will go through the system and kill whatever germs there might be latent in the distribution system, not the actual water supply, but in the distribution system. But by the time it gets to your house, you know, you should be in good shape. But if you really want it to be extra, extra safe, you know, a drop or two of iodine, you know, when I go backpacking, that's one of the things you use. You either put a tablet or a drop of iodine, a quarter a gallon of water, and that kills everything.
Okay.
So, it's something I'm going to definitely look into because I know that they sell these rather large barrels, and they also tout, these retailers tout water purification tablets. But you don't think we need anything beyond iodine, right?
Well, no, not unless there's some reason to think that your supply is problematic. You know, there's a couple of terrific recent books on bottled water. One is Bottled and Sold by Peter Glick, G-L-E-I-C-K, and the other is Elizabeth Reike, who did a book called Bottle Mania. And both of them say that in almost all instances, the municipal supply is better than what you're likely to get out of a bottled water system. So I don't think there's any reason to spend the money on a bottled water system or buy bottled water.
Well, not at 1,000 times the cost. Robert, I know you're also concerned about water waste. We just got a moment before the break, but let's go ahead and start there. What makes you think that we're wasting water in the form where it could actually lead to a shortage?
Well, I think we're already in a crisis, and the reason for that is just since 2007, Dave and Annie, Atlanta, Georgia came within 90 days of having its principal water supply, Lake Lanier, dry up. The little hamlet of Orme, Tennessee, literally did run out of water and had to truck water in. The state of Florida has had enormous sinkholes. Sinkholes occur and lakes dry up. South Carolina is suing North Carolina over water. Now, no, I'm talking about the Southeast. I haven't said anything about the West, right? This is the most humid area of the country, and people are losing jobs. There's a company in South Carolina, Bow Water, a paper company, that had to close its doors and fire all its workers because there wasn't enough water in the river. The state of Georgia denied permits for two new nuclear plants, even though we're desperate in the United States for more energy. This is in the Southeast. So if you think about water, it's not a Western problem. It's a national problem. And it's not just an environmental problem. It's not about the fishes and the birds. It's about the health of the American economy. And we may fret in the United States about running out of oil, but water lubricates the American economy just as oil does.
Well, we're up against the break. When we come back, we're going to pursue a little bit more about the shortages. And I'm going to bring Nestle back into the conversation. Stay tuned, everybody. More with Robert Glennon, here with Dave and Annie on the Common Sense Show. We'll be right back.
Have you heard? Proactiv is new and better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With new Proactiv, your acne can heal and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Be one of the first to try it by giving us a call at 1-800-635-1053. Because we're going to let a million people try new Proactiv risk-free. Get two free gifts and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. Be one of the first to try new and better than ever Proactiv. And you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of the new Proactiv, two free extras, and free shipping when you call 1-800-635-1053. This is our best radio offer ever. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of new Proactiv plus free shipping. That's right, free shipping. This offer won't last long. Call 1-800-635-1053. That's 1-800-635-1053.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
After my second heart attack, I knew I needed more help than I had. That's when Extendovite came into my life. Made from garlic, cayenne, and five other herbs, I started to feel better in a very short time. My name's Don Wiskin, and I'm here because of Extendovite.
Extendovite gave me more energy than I've had in years. I am the only one in my house right now that's not sick from colds or flus. And I owe that all to Extendovite. My name is Rick, and I'm healthy because of Extendovite. To get your Extendovite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit the website at heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! Huh. For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Joining Annie and I this evening is law professor Robert Glennon from the University of Arizona. And Robert, as we went into the break, I said I wanted to talk a little bit about water waste and kind of bend that into a discussion on water shortages. There have been a lot of allegations levied against Nestle, both in TV, television media, and as well as the print media, that they're funneling water out of the country and creating an artificial shortage. Do you know anything about that?
Oh, they're not funneling water out of the country. That's just neurotic. You know, they're just selling it here. I mean, water is too cheap and too heavy to be transporting out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the problems we have, is water is so cheap that we don't take care of it. So, no, I don't think Nestle's not shipping water out of the country. What they are doing is they're taking public water and they're turning around and selling it back to the public, right here in the United States. You don't need to look at some international conspiracy. You can just look right here and say, golly, you know, what are they doing? They're tapping into wells or in other ways getting access to water, and they're putting in the bottle and then they're selling it to Americans.
And are they authorized to do this?
Yeah, they get the water rights to do it. Yeah, there's nothing illegal about what Nestle is doing. It's problematic environmentally. Well, when I say not illegal, there's a group in Michigan that's challenging what Nestle is doing there, claiming that the pumping is affecting their water rights. And in probably, oh gosh, Dave and Annie, 10 or 12 states, there are local citizens groups that are protesting bottled water operations. So the pushback from local people is loud and clear. And at this point, you know, I think you see around campuses prohibitions on selling water. You're seeing taxes being put in place in San Francisco and Chicago on bottled water, and Maine's done the same thing. So there's a lot of resistance to using more bottled water. I was at a high school in New Jersey within the last year, and they had a big campaign to get off the bottle, and they had these stainless steel or heavy duty bottles where you can just put your water in the bottle and then keep refilling it. And the art kids drew nice drawings on the side of the bottle for you, and it was really quite clever.
Is there anything inherent in the bottles themselves that would pose any kind of a health risk, other than the fact that we're looking at recycled water, which I want to talk about separately?
Yeah, I think there may be, but I wouldn't pretend to be an expert or a chemist or anything like this, Dave or Annie. But remember the flap this past year over the PBA in the hard-sided bottles that you use, like your Nalgene bottles or stuff like that?
Yes.
And the bottles that the bottled water people make, or Gatorade, or soft drink manufacturers, it's really cheap plastic, and they're trying to make it lighter and lighter in weight, because after all, they have to ship it, and it costs to ship. And so it's not very durable, and there's at least some indication that if you keep reusing it over and over, you may be leaching stuff into it. So I would not personally use a cheap throwaway Costco bottled water for my daily supply. You know, when I go to the gym, I use a hard-sided, non-PBA bottle, and I just keep filling that up.
Of tap water.
Correct.
Yes. Well, I guess also what concerns myself, at least, and also the people that have contacted me about this, is that the tap water is sometimes inherently unsafe too, and putting it into bottles just exacerbates the problem because the water gets exposed to light and heat.
That can be, you know, the premise is it's inherently unsafe. I think that there are occasions in the United States where that is true, but there are very few instances where that in fact is true. You know, there's thousands of municipal suppliers, and there are contaminants that are in the water in various places. So, you know, the two authors I mentioned earlier have written about instances where the tap supply is problematic. But it's a very, very tiny percentage of the places in the United States. So most of us shouldn't be worried about drinking tap water.
So generally you think our tap water is overwhelmingly safe?
It is. It's an incredible testament to it. Here's the problem. You want an issue. Here's the issue. It's the despicable attack on the safety of our public water supply being made by the bottled water industry to try to undermine the American public's faith in our public supply. And we have reason to be proud in the United States of serving everyone safe water. I mean, our public supply is amazing. You go into third world countries, no one drinks the public supply. Everyone drinks bottled water. But we've had a long tradition of healthy, wholesome, pure bottled pure tap water, and the public and the bottled water companies have had a campaign of trying to undermine our faith in it.
And isn't it funny that, or ironic, I should say, that they turn around and use the same tap water in bottled water?
Yeah, some of them do, and the way that they do it is then usually with additional treatment, but I'm not sure if they always add additional treatment.
Okay, we're going to hold it right there. We're going to take our bottom of the hour break, and we'll be back with Robert Glennon after a word from these sponsors.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.
Don't answer it.
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Estrogen dominance, a brand new 20th century disease, a phrase coined by Dr. John R. Lee 35 years ago. Dr. Lee proved that all the estrogen that is coming from food and water is having a devastating effect on our health. The rapid rise in breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer, weight gain, osteoporosis, feminizing of our boys and early puberty of our girls, and also the destruction of natural killer cell function. Natural killer cells are our only protection from cancer and viral infection. Dr. Lee found that using natural progesterone, about 20 milligrams per day, would not only reverse osteoporosis, but would greatly reduce the cancer issues, as well as dozens of other health challenges we face today. Visit our website, healthlinkamerica.com, to order the DVD on hormone imbalance. Learn how hormone imbalance destroys the immune system and get started on natural progesterone and Cyto-S. It will not only change your life, it may in fact save your life. Once again, that website is healthlinkamerica.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Dave and Annie here with U of A law professor Robert Glennon, and U of A stands for University of Arizona. Robert, I'm reading reports which speaks to water shortages here where we live in the Southwest with regard to Lake Mead and our nation's largest water supply as well, which is the Great Lakes. Are we just in a bad weather cycle? And if so, what does that mean to the average water consumer?
Oh, gosh, Dave, those are great questions. They go together. Lake Mead, which is the principal water supply for Las Vegas and a major water supply for Phoenix and Los Angeles, is within a very small amount of being at historic lows, meaning all the way back to the 1930s when we first built Hoover Dam. Similarly, in the Great Lakes, Lake Superior, the largest of the Great Lakes, is too low to float fully loaded cargo ships, and that requires the offloading of hundreds of tons of freight from freighters and dramatically increases the price of shipping. So what's going on? Well, there's a really pretty powerful case to say that it's global climate change. In the case of the Southwest, it's that the way that the wind patterns are occurring is we're getting much less precipitation. This year is a little bit aberrant because the Sierras are pretty much full, but the Sierras, of course, are not part of the Colorado River system. And over time, when you look at the historic records, what you see in the Southwest is that the last 50 years have been increasingly dry, lower levels of precipitation than have occurred over not just hundreds of years, but you know, as much as 1,000 years. In the case of the Great Lakes, Dave and Annie, the situation seems to be much the same, which is warmer temperatures in the Great Lakes have meant that for Lake Superior, you have had shorter periods during the winter, not the summer, during the winter, when there is ice. Now, why should that matter? Well, in the summer in the Great Lakes, it's very humid, and you've got lots of clouds. But in the winter, you don't have clouds. And when you have less ice, then you have more evaporation loss off the surface of the lake, which, again, is a sign of climate change. Now, where's the water going? That's sort of the interesting question, because, of course, the hydrologic cycle doesn't let us make water, nor does it let us destroy water. So it's ending up someplace, but it's not in those two areas.
Well, where is the water going?
Well, I'm not sure we know.
Is anybody benefiting downstream, so to speak?
Yeah, definitely. But it's, you know, benefiting could be like the floods in Australia last week.
Interesting.
And yeah. They might not say it's benefiting. I mean, and what the scientists are predicting, and seems to be coming to pass, is not just simply warmer temperatures, but more severe events. And so whether it's Hurricane Katrina or the tsunamis in Asia or the floods in Australia or floods last year in Europe, I mean, there's some pretty, or flooding last fall in the East, you've got some very extreme events. Now, it's tough to generalize on hemispheric conditions based on a few weather episodes, because the weather's always up and down. It's cold one day and it's hot the next, and so on and so forth. But it's scary. I mean, not to plan for this would be utterly irresponsible. And the people, for example, in California are scared silly, because not only does the Sierra seem to be getting less precipitation, but so does the Colorado River, and there's only one state in the country that depends on those two systems for its water supply, and that's California.
And that's still 40 million people.
You got it.
And that could be catastrophic if this trend continues. Well, what would a water shortage look like? If you were to put on your fortune-telling hat here and look into the future, where do you think this is going to end up for the average consumer?
Well, the water shortage or the water crisis is already here. That's what I argue in Unquenchable,
okay.
My book. I mean, when people are losing their jobs, when the commercial fishing season is canceled, when you can't float fully loaded cargo ships in the Great Lakes, and you can't build power plants, we got a problem. This is not futuristic or sci-fi or some nutty imagination in the future. But a crisis, I think, is also a time of opportunity, because we still have choices to make. We have paths in the road, and we can select one path or the other path to make the crisis, to prevent the crisis from becoming a catastrophe. And so that's what we need to do, is we have options.
Well, what would it look like? Are we going to look at water rationing soon? I mean, I grew up in Colorado where we could only water our lawns when I was a kid every third day. Are we looking at going to something like this?
Yeah, well, let's look at that. Sure. I mean, why did you have a lawn in Colorado, which is an arid area, if you think about that? You know, in the West, we have this culture of having lawns. It's a fairly bizarre culture, if you think about it, for more than 60 seconds. I mean, Southern California is this wonderful area of lush rose bushes and fountains and lawns, but it's a desert. I mean, L.A. and San Diego get 13 inches of rain a year. I'm sitting in Tucson in the middle of the Sonoran Desert. We get 12 inches of rain. Southern California is a desert. But the people there just act as though it were a temperate zone, as though they were in Costa Rica. Well, they're not in Costa Rica, so why don't we rethink why we spend all this money and water and all these pesticides and fertilizers watering lawns? Let's have a different kind of landscape.
Yeah, well, we're certainly seeing people adapt to that, at least up here where I live in the Phoenix area. I mean, you know, you're seeing the newer homes come in with a lot less grass, actually more smaller in square acreage too, but or square footage. But they are, we're looking at some conservation methods here. Let me go along these lines too, because what we're seeing in America And in fact, I just talked to someone in New York today, and he told me about his community where they're privatizing the water, and the water rates just tripled. And here in Arizona, the same thing happened in a retirement community in part of Sun City. What's your opinion on privatization? Can they better manage the use of water so we don't waste so much? Is it going to cost the consumer more?
Yeah, let's talk about privatization, because that is a very, very hot-button issue. First, Dave and Annie, it's a question of what do you mean by privatization? Because privatization has many different shadings. One could be simply that the city hires the equivalent of waste management, which picks up my trash here in Pima County. They hire waste management to deliver your water. Well, that's one thing. But the really hot-button issue is if the city turns over the ownership of water to a private company. I see no reason for any city in the United States to do that. Water is a public resource. It should always be under the control of the government on behalf of the people.
See this turn into as to what the World Bank is calling for, basically water to become a commodity.
Well, water is a commodity in some ways. Let me come back to that. But in terms of municipal supply, I think it should always be controlled by the political entity. But there are private water companies in the United States regulated by a political entity, namely the State Public Utility Commission.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Arizona, it's the Arizona Corporation Commission. And there are communities where that works quite fine. The city of Indianapolis, for example, has a private water company. That's fine. It depends on, you know, how well or poorly managed the private water company is or the municipal water department. So that's kind of hither or there, you know. Depends on the devil, as they say, is in the details.
Are you okay with the private public-private partnerships that are emerging in this field?
Yeah, that
too?
Sort of thing. Right, right. And see, the problem with this is that both sides think they're going to make out like bandits. So the city strapped for resources thinks, oh golly, I'm just going to bail out of this. Like the state of Arizona is selling public buildings. I'll just sort of let them have to take over the operation and maintenance of it. It won't cost me anything. And then the private company, on the other hand, thinks, oh, I'm going to make a bundle out of this. And neither side is very honest with the other, and, you know, you end up with not happy people on both sides. So we need to stay true to our commitment as a democracy to provide water for all. We haven't recognized water as a human right, but we should in the United States. My goodness, if the richest country in the history of the world, with all of our resources, cannot make that commitment to our people, then we are a sorry lot. But the fact is, Dave and Annie, that's not a lot of water. When you look at basic human needs and you multiply it by 300 million of us in the States, you end up with 1% of the water used in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So what we really need to do is to talk about that other 99%. Who controls that? What should the price be? And we need to price water appropriately, because it isn't. I mean, right now in the States, we're spoiled. We wake up in the morning, and we turn on the tap, and we pay less for what comes out of the tap than we do for cell phone service or for cable television. We think that water is like air, infinite and inexhaustible, when in fact it's very finite and very exhaustible.
So you think we should charge more, so we would be more conservation-oriented?
Absolutely. And I would do that by first having a lifeline rate, you know, a human right to water, and I would have the basic units of water be priced very cheaply, but then I would ratchet it up in increasing block rates. I mean, the stunning thing is one-third of American cities do it just the opposite. They have decreasing block rates so that the more you use, the less you pay. What possible rationale is there for that? Other cities, even more bizarrely, like Sacramento or Fresno, they have no water meters. You just use however much you want. That is not responsible government. The government has a stewardship obligation to take care of this resource. And to just let willy-nilly access to that resource in infinite quantities is not being responsible.
Before Before we take a call, let me ask you about your thoughts on desalinization. Wouldn't that help alleviate some of the issue? From the
problem? Yeah. Desal is a real technology. It's a viable technology, but, Dave, it's not a silver bullet for three quick reasons before your next break. One, it's really expensive. The membranes are very high-tech, costly, prone to fouling, and they require frequent replacement. Second, it uses scads of energy because it's all done under pressure, and there's a big connection between water and energy, so it takes more water and it costs more. And the third thing is with desal, what are you going to do with the salts that are extracted from the process? They don't magically disappear. You have to get rid of them, and that can be a very vexing environmental problem.
So until we solve those problems, we've got to find out how to best deal with our water issues with what we've got at hand. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Well, desal is a real option. And if you've got few other choices and you can figure out what to do with those salts that are concentrated, and if you have, and if it's a valuable, and if you can pay the money, then desal can be an option. But it's not a silver bullet.
Let's squeeze in a quick call. Let's go to Carlisle, Minnesota. Hi, you're on with Robert Glennon.
Yes, I'd like to ask your guest, are you familiar with water filters such as the Berkey water filters?
I'm not familiar with that particular one. There's a lot of different water filters out there, though, sir.
This is a type, it uses a purification element that is, it's called a gravity filter. It's a black filter, and they say it contains all these pores which remove all of the 100% of the pathogens plus the chlorine and stuff like that. Now, if you have a regular municipal drinking water from the tap that doesn't have any particular problems, is there any advantage to... They cost about over $200 to buy them.
Yeah,
but everyone tells me, you know, I hear all these things, the water is so harmful from the tap because it contains so many bad things. You need to buy a water filter. Do you agree or disagree?
As a general proposition, sir, I completely disagree. But the first thing you should do is you should check out with your local water utility, your municipality, and you should get their annual report on what's in the water. Because the good thing about tap water is that the Safe Drinking Water Act, the federal act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, requires that they do an annual report to customers about what they found in the water. And so you can find out if there's anything in it that you really should be concerned about.
Well, I mean, I'm not a chemist. If they come out with some, I'm not going to be able to even know what they're talking about in a report like that.
Yeah, but you could have someone, you could find someone that could break that down for you. I've done the same thing with my water supply where we moved into where we're at. We tap into well water, and so that's not that hard to do. Anyway, Carlisle, thanks for the call. Robert, you know, one of the things, too, that I'm also wondering is what about recycling rainwater? I mean, I've actually heard of people now trying to come up with a technology to make this feasible for larger urban areas.
Oh, well, recycling or reuse is a very important thing, and recycling is of very different sorts. I mean, at one level, Dave, we are recycling water all the time. I mean, we're drinking the same water that the dinosaurs drank. Or, to put it differently, if you think about the Mississippi River, by the time it goes from Minnesota down where the caller just was from, down to Louisiana, it's been reused 7 times.
My goodness.
So we're reusing water all the time. And here in Tucson, about 10% of the water that Tucson Water provides is reclaimed water. It's water that went through the treatment plant, and then we use it for watering lawns, watering the greens and fairways and golf courses, light industrial applications, cemeteries, parks, ballpark, highway medians, those sorts of things. You don't need to use that water for drinking purposes, for potable purposes, but there's lots of things you can do with treated municipal effluent, reclaimed water. And then the latest thing is harvesting water off of your own rooftop, where you just have a little cistern and you take the water that comes down the spout and you capture it and use it for watering your landscape in your backyard.
Now, where we live in Arizona, we're not going to get real far with that, but in some regions of the country, they could really benefit from that. And I could see that being a booming business where they could actually ship that water or build some kind of transportation system for that water and make a lot of money off of it.
Well, actually, locally, you'd be surprised how much you can get off a rooftop. And there's a fellow here in Tucson who's written the book on what it's called water harvesting. And it's happening, golly, in Unquenchable. I tell the story of a couple off of Seattle on San Juan Island, which is a very arid place off of Seattle. They capture the water that hits the roof during the rainy season. They store it in a cistern. They filter it, and they have a system to make sure that it's potable. And they're off the grid. They have no use for any well water or anything else just because of the water that hit their roof.
Okay, well, sit tight. We'll be right back after the break, and we're going to tell people how to get your book. Stay tuned, everybody. More with Robert Glennon on the other side.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with micro plant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of micro plant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Microplant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, Microplant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
The Grainmaker Grain Mill. Handmade goodness since 1999. Handcrafted stainless steel and high-quality alloys. There has not been a finer grain mill made right here in the great state of Montana. Hand-operated, the grain mill does it all. Wheat, corn, peanut butter, rye, rice, coffee, beans, flaxseed, all grain types. Make your own gluten-free flour. Experience the satisfaction of providing wholesome, nutritious foods for your family without additives or preservatives. Each mill is handcrafted with manufacturer's lifetime warranty. To order your grain mill, call us at 1-800-724-2719 or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Take a look at why this grain mill will be passed down through generation.
Our guest this first hour has been Robert Glennon, law professor and instructor at the University of Arizona Law School. And Robert, just real quick, we just out of curiosity, what kind of law classes do you teach?
Well, I teach a course that I love for first-year students, constitutional law. That's just, my all-time favorite. And I teach a course in water law. I teach a course on the history of the Colorado River. And then I teach various seminars depending on the year. So I'm very lucky. I've got a job that I love, and I couldn't be happier with what I do.
Well, you're certainly part of a law school that has a well-deserved great reputation, and I do appreciate you coming on the show and speaking with us about water this evening. But before we let you go, tell everyone how they can get a copy of your books.
Oh, gosh, any bookseller. You know, I'm a big fan of independent booksellers, Dave and Annie. You know, they just perform amazing services to our community, so I try and support them. If you can't do that or you want to look elsewhere, I think the easiest thing is Amazon.com. It's pretty widely available.
And you've got a website, too.
I do, rglennon.com.
rglennon. And can you spell that last name for the listener?
rglennon.com. rglennon.com.
And just a quick response to this question. What did you, what's your opinion of the Water Restoration Act? Do you like that the feds are taking over all water?
Oh, well, they're not taking over our water. Water Restoration Act. I'm not even sure which act.
Okay.
The listeners were
probably another topic for another time, but basically I was just talking about federalizing basically all waters. It used to just be navigable waters, but
Yeah. Well, but navigable waters, that's a fairly complicated story. I think it's not bad, because those of us who care about the environment want the water to be navigable, because it means that people will have access to it. If it's determined not navigable, then under the rules of many states, that means that people can't have access to fish it or float it or canoe it or enjoy it. So let's keep water public.
Okay, well, on that point, we're in complete agreement.
Great.
I'm a big believer in private enterprise, but not when it comes to something as important as water. Well, Robert,
Amen,
you've been a delightful
Davis.
Guest, and I want to thank you for taking time out of your Sunday evening. And, again, our condolences to you and the whole Tucson community for the tragedy of 8 days ago. And let's hope Gabby Giffords and the rest and the community as a whole heal quickly.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave and Annie. It was great to be on your show.
Thank you. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Robert Glennon. Annie, interesting to get those kind of viewpoints on water.
Yes, I had quite a few questions that I think we could have batted back and forth on that I don't agree with some of the things that he said because of the research that I've done, but, you know.
Well, for instance?
Well, 787, for one thing, it's called the Clean Water Restoration, and when they took navigable out, it means that any water or water source, whether it has water flowing in it or not, now belongs to the government. You cannot irrigate from it. You cannot use from it. You cannot put down a well. I mean, you always have to have a permit to dig a well. Yes, right. But you can be denied a well permit for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Corporations.
Well, we've got to hold it there, Annie, because we're up against the hourly break. And we come back, we're going to get some contrasting views from our next guest, Mark Circus, and we'll get the listeners to be able to compare the two points of view on water. Stay tuned, everybody. See you in hour number two.
The next